going to go on to Habina versus Metropolitan Life, which is case 072531, and it's Mr. Olson. Good morning.
Good morning.
No, good afternoon.
May it please the court, I'm Tom Olson. I represent Albert Giabina. And this is an appeal by Dr. Habina from a decision of the District Court for the Eastern District of Wisconsin in which the court granted the defendant's motion for summary judgment. Dr. Habina's action was brought under several provisions of the Employee Retirement Income Security Act to recover long-term disability income benefits that had been withdrawn by the defendants from him in August of 2002, after the benefits had been paid for a period of almost 2 years. The trial court granted the defendant's motion on the basis that Dr. Habina's action was untimely. That is, that it was brought beyond a three-year period contained in the defendant's long-term disability plan, a three-year period that began to run when proof of disability was due to be filed. And in this case, the proof of disability was filed by Dr. Habina in November of 2002. In granting the defendant's motion for summary judgment, the district court relied solely on this court's decision in the case of Doe versus Blue Cross and Blue Shield of United of Wisconsin.
Now, let me ask you this, Mr. Olson. Is there some reason that Dr. Habina could not file his claim within those remaining 7 months?
There is not, Your Honor. But in fact, we got involved in the matter after the expiration of 3 years from the date of the filing of the proof of disability. But in looking at the case and assuming that we're correct that the actual period of limitations that should be applied is the six-year Wisconsin period contained in Wisconsin statutes for actions on contracts, it appeared to us that the action would be timely. But no, I suppose it could have been filed earlier. But after we looked at it, we were satisfied that Doe was distinguishable and that the six-year period would be the applicable one. In fact, there was a little bit of concern or question about what the accrual date for the action was, and the cases have varied a bit on this, but even assuming that the accrual date was the date on which proof of disability was due to be or required to be filed, 6 years, the action was filed within 6 years of that date, that is the date of the filing of the proof of disability. But we believe that Doe is distinguishable because it involved a health insurance plan or a policy, not a long-term disability income benefit plan, as is the case here. And why is this important? Because the plan in Doe appears to have contemplated the periodic filings of proofs of loss, each one of which would have triggered the period for the commencement of an action, not as in this case, a one-time filing of a proof of disability. And in fact, the proof of disability under the policy involved here had to be filed within 1 year from the onset of disability. The distinction between a proof of loss and a proof of disability, we think, is important because in Doe, the employee benefit plan at issue provided that no legal action may be commenced later than 3 years from the time written proof of loss was required to be filed. And written proof of loss, this court said, had to be filed within 90 days of the date of service, that is, the date of the medical service for which the proof of loss was being filed. That's what this court said the plan provided. The plan provided that you filed the proof of loss within 90 days of the date of service for which you're seeking reimbursement or compensation. And in fact, in this case, the district court, in its decision, mistakenly called what had to be filed in Doe a proof of disability, not a proof of loss. But it's clear from this court's decision in Doe that what was filed was a proof of loss, and a proof of loss is something that's filed, at least in my understanding, when you wish to seek compensation for monies accrued or paid out, or incurred or paid out. And this court also said, in looking at the policy, the health insurance plan or policy in Doe, that under the terms of that plan, any legal action must be commenced within 39 months of the first date of services on which the action is based. Thus, so long as the service continued, and in Doe the service was psychiatric treatment, and so long as proofs of loss were submitted, the period in which the plan beneficiary could sue the plan if benefits were denied remained at 39 months. I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. Dr. Ram lost his. I'm sorry. What is his name?
Dr. Abina.
I've got another name. Wrong name. Adina Abina lost his coverage when they discovered that he was actually practicing again.
Well, that was a contention. In fact, a great deal of the briefing in this case.
I don't want to get into.
Devoted to the issue of whether or not.
Get off track here. For whatever reason, whether right or not, they determined he was practicing again. And I just wondered if there was a way to remain under this policy or to apply again at some point if this disability were to come back.
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor.
Okay. I was just curious about that, whether this is a one-time deal or it's something that later on, kind of like Social Security, you don't get benefits at one point, but later on you really are disabled or something.
I can't answer that. Okay. I can tell you that there was an extended or somewhat protracted period after he was notified that benefits were being withdrawn, during which they attempted to persuade MetLife to overturn or reverse its decision, and that didn't. In fact, the final denial didn't come until April of 2003.
So left that 7 months, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
What is your response to the alternative argument that even if the claim was timely, the plan's decision wasn't arbitrary or capricious?
Well, we had argued that the denial of benefits was arbitrary and capricious. I think on both sides, the bulk of the briefing and argument. And it seemed to us, in fact, that the argument about the period of limitations period was kind of afterthought, but sort of a short separate defense kind of thrown in. And it's the one that the district court seized upon to dismiss the case. But there's been no discussion by the court yet of the merits or of whether or not, in fact, the decision was arbitrary and capricious. And if this court should overturn the district court's decision on the matter of the period of limitations, it would then go back to the court, I assume, for a decision on the balance of the defendant's motion for summary judgment. In Doe, the psychiatric services, in fact, had been provided over a period of a year and a half, and the district court said that the final date on which Doe could bring an action for any portion of the costs was, in fact, a date 39 months after the final date on which services for which Doe was seeking benefits or the services for which Doe was seeking benefits were rendered. That's under the circumstances of Doe, it appears, 39 months to bring an action following the submission and denial of a proof of loss was not unreasonable, especially since, as pointed out in the case of Favre versus Prudential Insurance Company, a case that we've relied on to some extent in our brief and in argument before the district court, especially since, according to Favre at least, initial claims for services like medical bills are more likely to be resolved fairly quickly and at an early stage. But here we have a situation in which benefits continued and were paid for a period of 2 years before then they were withdrawn. And what happened, or what Favre says is the concern in such a case, is that there's a great deal of opportunity for mischief by an insurance company. An insurance company could pay benefits for 3 years under the terms of the policy, like the one involved here and like the one involved in the Favre case, and then withdraw benefits with impunity. That is, it could just say, well, we're not going to pay benefits anymore. The 3 years is run. You can't bring an action.
Well, I guess the question here is whether the 7 months that are left was at least a reasonable time.
Well, it's reasonable. I think Doe would say it's reasonable if we're talking about an initial claim. But if we're looking at a policy if we're looking at withdrawal of benefits, and if we're saying that same three-year period applies to withdrawal of benefits, at least some cases that we've cited in our brief, including the Favre case, say that a plain language reading of the policy that permits an insurance company to, if it's up to mischief, to bar a claim altogether if withdrawal of benefits to say that you can no longer bring an action if the withdrawal of benefits occurs after 3 years is unreasonable. And as a consequence, it's necessary then to look to what might be a more reasonable period, such as a state period of limitations for contract actions. So we say it's unreasonable, and the cases seem to support that. It's unreasonable to apply that period of limitations to cases in which there's a withdrawal of benefits as opposed to an initial claim because of this possibility for, as I characterize it, mischief or wrongdoing or unreasonable action by an insurance company. So that's why it's necessary, at least under some of the cases, to look to a longer period of limitations.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Wright.
May it please the Court, I'm Joseph Wright. I represent the defendants' appellees, Metropolitan Life Insurance Company and American Dental Partners. I'd like to first respond to one of the questions that you asked, Your Honor, about what, if anything, prevented Dr. Urbina from bringing a claim against MetLife in the 7 months after his appeal was denied. And the answer is, as counsel candidly acknowledged, nothing. And I want to point out to the Court that MetLife, in its response to Mr. Olson's predecessor, told him, if you feel, in the denial letter in April 2003, if you feel that MetLife has violated ERISA in handling this appeal, you may sue immediately. That was in the letter. It's in the record at number 22. It's part of the materials that were supplied as the administrative record to the Court below. So Dr. Urbina's counsel, his prior counsel, was on notice immediately upon denial of the benefits that he was entitled to sue. He had 7 months to do that, and consistent with this Court's holding in Doe, that is a reasonable amount of time.
Well, of course, in Doe it was 17 months.
It was, Your Honor. That's true. And the total amount of time in this case was actually longer than in Doe. It was 42 months from the time that proof of disability was required to be filed until the 3 years lapsed before the lawsuit had to be filed.
You know, you argue that the three-year period is reasonable in general and as applied to Dr. Urbina. But how would it be reasonable for claims that do not arise until more than 3 years after the proof of claim is filed? In other words, this three-year limit would allow MetLife to stop payment of all claims after 3 years, even those that are perfectly legitimate, and the claimants would have no recourse, even though the cause of action did not arise until after the period of limitations expired. Would that be a reasonable result under ERISA?
Two answers to that, Your Honor. First, that isn't the case we have here, as you acknowledged, I think. But secondly, Doe answers that question as well, I believe. Because in Doe, what the Court ultimately held, while it held that the statute, that the limitation period in the plan was reasonable, the Court went on to consider the particular circumstances of that case and held that under the doctrine of equitable estoppel, the plaintiff was entitled to his day in court in the trial court. So in the instance that a plan administrator were inclined to engage in that kind of devious behavior and simply terminate a claim after the limitation period had run, essentially lulling the plaintiff along for that period of time, equitable estoppel and other doctrines may allow the plaintiff to assert a claim. But I'd emphasize that that is not the case before you today, because that isn't what happened. In fact, there's been no allegation of any improper conduct on the part of MetLife in this case, either below or in this court.
The time begins to run once the benefit has begun being paid. Isn't that the way it works? You have this elimination period, and then after that's run, then you start paying the disability benefits. Isn't that the way this...
The time begins to run, according to the plan, 3 years after proof of disability must be filed.
Yeah, but that includes the time benefits are being paid.
It would, Your Honor, because the proof of disability must be filed within 3 months after the end of the elimination period. That's correct.
See, the problem I have with reading that language is trying to figure out, it doesn't seem to fit well into a situation where somebody's already receiving benefits. Mm-hmm.
By that, you're referring back to the question that Judge Roedner asked.
Yeah, and I understand here you say they still had 213 days or something to file a claim, but the way I read this, tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, somebody files a proof of claim, they go through this elimination period, they're given disability benefits, and they get them for 4 years, let's say. Mm-hmm. And then you say, you're no longer disabled, we're cutting you off. They have no remedy here, do they?
Their remedy is initially to go through the internal appeals process if there's a denial of benefits, and if in that process there's been a failure by the plan administrator to properly consider, or there's other considerations that give rise to equitable estoppel or other legal theories,
they could bring a claim. Before you even get into all that, why wouldn't the company say, you have to file under our policy, within this 3-year period? And it just doesn't seem to fit a situation where you're already being paid benefits.
Well, I think, Your Honor, that we don't need to reach that in this particular case, as I've said. But secondly, I think that the protection for the plan participant is that all the way through they're being evaluated. And in this case, for instance, Dr. Urbino was told a year and a half into his disability benefits that we're coming up on the second anniversary and we are going to review your claim.
I understand all those things. I do. And I at least I think I do. You told them that you're going to reevaluate, then you have this reevaluation period, and you rely on a surveillance video, and you say, this guy's no longer disabled, so now he's out. You stop payments. And the way it worked out in this case, the 3-year period still had 213 days left. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But what if it didn't?
Mm-hmm. And I think the Doe Court acknowledged that in fact, could happen. But what it deferred to is the party's right to contract. And the court in Doe said, as long as when we look at an individual case, the time left for suit is reasonable, we are going to uphold the determination of the trial court that the suit was time-barred. And that is, in fact, what happened here.
But Doe was not, I mean, the governing principle... The facts are different.
Yes?
The facts are really different. Well, I'm just worried about... Well, I'm worried about all the things that my brother is worried about, but I'm also worried about the cases to come. I mean, there seems to be something... It's just unjust because I could never say here that the provision is reasonable in all circumstances, because as I think I said before, the insurer could use that limitation to stop paying valid claims after 3 years with no challenge from the claimant. And that being the case, I don't know. I've got to go back and look at it all again.
Well, if I may, Your Honor, my suggestion is that this court in Doe did not set out a standard of it must be reasonable under all circumstances. Instead, the court in Doe looked at the circumstances in that case as the trial judge did in this case, and said, this is a reasonable limitation under Doe, I'm going to uphold it. That's what this court can do in this case. The alternative ground that we've asserted is that there was no arbitrary and capricious denial of benefits in this case because of the reasons we cited below and in our brief regarding the surveillance that was performed and the independent reviews that were done. And I don't believe, as counsel suggested, that it's necessary for this court to send this back to the district judge to analyze that question. That the review here is de novo. This court can look at that record just the same as the trial court does. It's an administrative review and determine that there was sufficient evidence in the record for MetLife to deny benefits to Dr. Urbina after it undertook the investigation and reviewed his claim three different times through three independent physician reviews.
Well, I think what you're asking us again to look at is the 7 months reasonable? And maybe with the insert of this letter saying you may sue immediately and some other things, this confined to this case. What everybody's asking, though, is the obvious, and that is, what if they drag this on another 7 months, and then you hit the deadline, and then there is no recourse? Then, in this opinion, do we say that won't work, or that wouldn't be reasonable, or do we... Because what we don't have here is an alternative time that would toll this time period where he's receiving benefits and then they're cut off. And that's really what this contract forces. And perhaps there's more to be said at some point when they do other contracts. But that's really the question that's being begged here.
Thank you, Your Honor. If I may conclude with this, I think that one of the things that the Doe case cautioned against is creating kind of a crazy quilt of different time limitations in different jurisdictions, whether that be by state or by judicial circuit, that would upset the uniformity that ERISA is designed to promote. And if this court instead looks in each instance at the reasonableness of the contractual limitation period, then that promotes the uniformity that Doe set up. Thank you very much.
You could say, well, the uniform. 1 month wouldn't be reasonable or something like that.
Pardon me?
You could say, but 1 month wouldn't be reasonable. We can't say about that. Or 2 months or 2 weeks before.
I think trial courts around the country make those kinds of judgments all the time in an as-applied context, whether in a particular instance a particular claimant had sufficient time, reasonable time, in which to bring a claim.
It seems to me this would be very easy to write a policy that would say, for instance, if you file a claim for disability and it is disapproved, you have, pick a number, 2 years to file a lawsuit. If your claim for disability is approved, but subsequently your disability is terminated, you have 2 years from that point to file a lawsuit. That would make sense to me.
I understand, Your Honor. My answer to that is that this court on many occasions has said that it is not the job of the courts to rewrite the plan terms to change the contract that's been bargained for by the parties, and that's exactly the principle that Doe upheld.
Unless they don't make sense.
I mean, in the real world, the parties don't bargain for things like this. That's lawyers talk about this. This person buys a policy, they don't know what's in here, do they?
No.
I mean, in the real world.
Your Honor, these are bargained between employers and insurance companies, not an individual. It's not a consumer situation, so I would respectfully suggest that there are instances where they're bargained, and that's what this court suggested in Doe.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Now, Mr. Olson, you did not save any time. Do you want 1 minute? All right. And next time you want to save some time, I'll give you 1 minute.
Well, I'm going to ask you one question, and maybe Judge Roland wants to give you a minute after that.
Okay.
But when we're looking at the equities here, this suit wasn't filed until 2006.
Yes, that's right.
So that's a long, long time.
It is, Your Honor, yes.
So... that's part of
I mean,
the problem. If we're looking at equities here, maybe you don't have that many on your side.
Yeah. Speaking for myself, I can say that the file in this matter is a very, very thick one. It's probably 6 inches thick in terms of documentation, medical records, surveillance reports. That's the only justification I can offer for some delay in actually filing the action. But if I may, just say a couple of things. One, Mr. Wright talked about an internal appeals process, but that doesn't stop the running of the limitations period within the policy for bringing an action. And the Favre case that we rely on and others have said that it's just unreasonable as a matter of law to impose a 3-year limitation on actions challenging the withdrawal of benefits as opposed to actions challenging initial denial of claims. And Dole was a case in which essentially it was a challenge to initial denial of claims or a claim. And even with initial claims, there's room for some, as I keep saying, some mischief. And as this court even in Doe said, if the internal appeals process is at all protracted, the plaintiff's time for suing may be substantially compressed. So that's why we would certainly argue for a uniform period. We think the best uniform period is the Wisconsin 6-year period for contracts. I think that unless such a period were imposed or adopted, you do run the risk of a crazy quilt of varying periods where 7 months might be unreasonable, 3 months might be reasonable, 10 months might not again be. So, thank you.
Well, thanks to both lawyers. Thank you, Mr. Olson, and thank you, Mr. Wright. And the case will be taken under advisement.